Welcome. My name is Asam Stolu. I'm a trainee editor of the UEG Journal, and you're listening to the UEG Journal podcast. Each episode will highlight one of the most relevant articles recently published in the journal, with the purpose of learning from the most recent evidence and to provide a platform for authors to discuss the most important findings of their research. Welcome back to the UEG Journal podcast. Today, I have the absolute pleasure of interviewing both Dr. Jörgen Bonstra and Dr. Nick Deckers, who will be talking to us about their paper recently published in the UEG Journal entitled Colorectal Polyps, Targets for Fluorescence-Guided Endoscopy to Detect High-Grade Dysplasia and T1 Colorectal Cancer. So welcome to you both. To start with, please could you introduce yourself, including your co-authors, and tell us where you work?
Yeah, thank you for your kind invitation to talk about our project. So my name is Nick Deckers. I'm a PhD student at the gastroenterology department at the Leiden University Medical Center in the Netherlands. And in my PhD, I focus on detection and local resection of early stage T1 colorectal cancer. And with me, I have Dr. Jörgen Bonstra, who is a gastroenterologist, also at the Leiden University Medical Center, specialized in advanced endoscopy. And we have, of course, not performed this study with only the two of us, but we had collaborators from the Department of Pathology, Surgery, and Gastroenterology of our hospital in Leiden.
Thank you. I was particularly interested in your work, and I'm kind of intrigued to find out more about how you decided to focus on developing targets for fluorescence-guided endoscopy. So could you start by giving us an overview of the rationale behind this work?
Yes, I can do that. Yeah, I'm Jörgen Bonstra. I'm one of the gastroenterologists here in the Leiden University Department of Gastroenterology, and focusing on endoscopic resections, and especially on endoscopic resection of large colorectal polyps. And mainly all those polyps are in the rectum or rectal sigmoid, sometimes in the sigmoid. And those are very challenging because there is always a discussion, should we remove those polyps en bloc or should we do it with patients? And if you want to remove those polyps, you want to know if it's cancerous or not. Because it's completely benign, then you can do it with a PEMR, so a piecemeal endoscopic mucosal resection. And if you have a suspicion of cancer in those polyps, and then you have to remove those polyps en bloc. And you have different techniques to remove those polyps en bloc with endoscopic submucosal dissection or endoscopic intermuscular dissection, or with local surgical resection, like TAMIS, transanal microsurgery. And that's the question, can we detect those small parts with cancer in those polyps? And the answer to that question is difficult, because we know from large studies, for example, the TREND study, was a study that randomized benign polyps for TEM, or piecemeal EMR, and it showed that 15% of those polyps still had cancer in it. So 15% of the patients got a piecemeal EMR, and in those pieces, cancer was found. And that's, of course, something you don't want as a clinician, because most of the time patients end with a surgical resection and sometimes even worse with a stoma. And it's difficult to see those small foci of cancer in those large polyps, especially if they are very large, then it's difficult to see. And in a TREND study, most of the gastroenterologists were experts, and in expert hands, still 15% of the patients have a so-called T1 colorectal cancer. So we are looking for new techniques to identify those small foci of cancer. And one of those techniques is fluorescence guided endoscopy.
Okay, that's very clear. Thank you. So my understanding is that in this study, you performed immunohistochemistry staining on patient samples in vitro and found some very promising biomarkers that appeared to be upregulated in high-grade dysplasia and T1 colorectal cancer. So how feasible do you think it would be to translate these biomarkers into targets for fluorescence endoscopy in vivo?
Yeah, that's of course something that we are very curious to assess in a follow-up study. But based on previous studies for this translation to like the clinical in vivo part, we know that you can of course only partly mimic the in vivo situation in these in vitro studies, like our current study that we're discussing. So for example, in the in vivo situation, you have other factors influencing your performance that include the degree of tissue penetration, but also like background staining and immunological responses that could occur in patients that do not occur that much in the in vitro situation. And of course, a completely different category that is like the sensitivity of the camera system that is used to capture the signal. So to kind of make this translation to the clinical study as smooth as possible, we beforehand deliberately chose to study only targets that already have clinical feasibility trials that were performed, maybe not in colorectal cancer specifically, but in different kind of diseases. But for example, the carcinoembryonic antigen target, so CEA, that we found was the most specific. For CEA, the feasibility of those contrast agents for in vivo tumor cancer imaging has already been showed, for example, in pancreatic cancer, but also in more advanced stages of colorectal cancer. So we're very curious to see whether this also holds in the more earlier stage, so in the T1 colorectal cancer. Yeah, but so we're optimistic, but we know from this study alone that it will, of course, not work for every patient. So yeah, that's something we will have to study.
Yeah. So speaking of the specificity of this marker, you mentioned that CEA is the one that you found to be the most specific. And I think it was, you described a specificity of 75% and a sensitivity of 65%. Do you think, obviously you included multiple biomarkers, I think if like the others, EpCAM and so forth, if they were also maybe upregulated to the same extent that CEA was, perhaps the specificity may have been slightly higher, but do you think, have you got any plans to kind of expand the panel further, or are you going to kind of work with CEA? Because my understanding is that this particular biomarker seems to be specific to the gastrointestinal tract, and it's mostly abundant in the large intestine, but it seems to maybe be present in normal tissues as well sometimes, which is maybe why the sensitivity is slightly lower. So are you planning to expand the panel, or are you going to try and work with CEA based on the clinical feasibility?
Yeah, for now, the plan is to work with the CEA. And that's mostly, so not only for the sensitivity and the specificity, but also mostly because it has the best distinctive staining compared to especially the benign polyp part. So that's what made CEA really better than, for example, EpCAM or CEMET, because CEA is much more specific to the high-grade dysplasia and the T1 compared to the not only the normal colon, but also low-grade dysplasia, which is mostly the biggest part of these polyps.
So if the level of unrecognized T1 colorectal cancers is still around 20% among experts and 80% among endoscopists at the community level, do you think that the resources that are required to train endoscopists to adopt the use of biomarker targets for fluorescence-guided endoscopy would improve the level of recognition of high-risk polyps?
Yeah, that's an intriguing question. I think it's more an academic situation here, because fluorescence, that's still mainly used in the academic hospital. And that's because we don't have actually a good endoscope to detect the fluorescent signal. And yeah, first you want to show that it's feasible to light up these cancerous foci in those polyps with fluorescence, and that's the first step we made here. It seems that the CEA is cancer specific and doesn't light up the a normal, benign polyp tissue, only the cancer tissue. But yeah, that you have to test that in vivo, of course. If you want to improve the recognition of high-risk polyps, I think you have to train your endoscopist more. And there are some training programs to do that with white light and with narrowband imaging, for example, and with near focus and zoom. To screen those polyps for small areas of cancer. And I think if you do that training program, I think that's far more efficient to improve the level of recognition for your community endoscopist than fluorescence. But still, if you are an expert and you're looking for those polyps and you're still missing about 20%, then I think there is the clue for the fluorescence.
So the staining of your biomarkers, in particular CEA, looked strikingly specific to the high-grade dysplasia and T1 colorectal cancer. I'm just wondering, how was the positive signal quantified, and what do you think the limitations might be for this method?
Yeah, so what we did to interpret the staining patterns is that we first selected a specific region of each stage of dysplasia, and we did that with a dedicated pathologist. And we did that in the standard H&E staining. And then we marked the same regions in all the slides with that were stained for the various targets that we studied. And we quantified it using the immunoreactive score. So this is a score that combines, which is a very well-used score, I think. And it uses, like, it combines the positive cell proportions and the staining intensity. And then you get a total immunoreactive score that ranges from 0 to 12, which can be further subdivided into four categories. So for our study, we had three observers independently evaluate the staining of the targets. And all the cases where there was a disagreement in the immunoreactive subgroup, we discussed until we agreed with each other. And the average of those scores is what we used and presented in our manuscript. So to get back to your question, I think the most important limitation is that with using this method of interpretation is still kind of subjective, I would say. So I think we have tried to address this the best way possible by using the most commonly used scoring method, I think, and also by having three people individually interpret the patterns and discuss cases with a disagreement. We shortly discussed a different approach which might be using a kind of computer-aided scoring system. But this was also told to us with people who have more experience that this would also be very challenging because all of these polyps are very different. So it would be very different to teach the computer what to score exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think immunohistochemistry or immunofluorescence staining is one of my favorite techniques in the lab because you just get such beautiful images and it gives you a lot of information just qualitatively looking at your tissue structure and the markers that you're interested in kind of understanding the localization of, but it's always so difficult to quantify and there's no perfect technique really, even if you do it with a software. But wow, I think three independent observers is a pretty robust. So could you please summarize the kind of conclusions that you drew from your findings and maybe end with your future directions for your research, please?
Yeah, the first is being that it's feasible to detect high-grade dysplasia in T1 colorectal cancer foci in colorectal polyps in vitro by staining for tumor-specific targets. And the second is that of the tested markers, CEA most frequently show differential expression in high-grade dysplasia and T1 colorectal cancer components compared to the surrounding polyp tissue with low-grade dysplasia. And however, it's an in vivo study is needed to confirm CEA as a suitable target to detect high-grade dysplasia and T1 colorectal cancer foci and colorectal polyps by fluorescence guided endoscopy, and we are planning the first study for that. But we have to go behind the medical ethical committee first, and then we will start an in vivo study. Yes.
Amazing. Best of luck with that. I guess it's going to be in patients, not like a animal model as such.
No, that's in patients with colorectal polyps, and I think with a high suspicion of T1 colorectal cancer.
Okay, yeah. Best of luck with that ethics application. I know how tedious they are to do.
Thank you.
Amazing. Thank you both very much for your time. I think it's a really excellent study, and hopefully anyone in the audience who hasn't already read your paper will be encouraged to go ahead and do so. And congratulations once again for your publication, and best of luck for your future in vivo studies.
Yeah, thank you very much. And thank you for the invitation to talk about our study.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this interview. And if you haven't already, please make sure to subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your episodes from. Thank you, and see you again.